Here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Fakes once, fakes twice, gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. But for these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the Kings Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunez. Got Rich Ivanowski on here, as we always do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
Doing good. I'm doing good. I got up very early this morning, and we're not recording super late or anything, but I'm very tired, so I'm trying to pick myself up here. How are you doing?
There you go. Sounds like I'm a little more awake than you are, but really just another day in the life. Getting used to new place I moved into and realizing every day that I don't have some basic household thing and having to run a Target way too often. But yeah, another day in the life. So going well. I was excited that I think it was yesterday there was some Sacramento news with these front office hirings, and three different people added to the list along with Monty McNair, and that is Wes Wilcox as assistant GM, Phil Jabor, hopefully I'm saying that last name right, as VP of player personnel, and Paul Johnson as director of basketball operations. First impressions of this, did any of the names stand out to you? I know Wes Wilcox was on the potential GM candidate list.
Yeah, well, that's the big standout to me for sure. And it's not even that I'm enamored with Wes Wilcox in particular. I don't think I would have been super excited if he was the GM, the new GM. But to get a guy that was a well-qualified candidate, at least to be in the GM race, to get him as assistant GM, I think that is a really positive sign. I'm excited about it. I'm impressed. Like I'm genuinely impressed that they got, you know, names that aren't, certainly they're not household names, the Monty McNairs and the Wes Wilcoxes of the world, but among the educated NBA front office world, like, these guys are really well respected. I honestly don't even know that much about either one of them. We've certainly learned more about Monty McNair, but and Wes Wilcox will be learning more about as well, but I do know their reputations are very high, and the fact that the Kings just landed two guys that probably could have gotten a job in a lot of different front offices across the league, that's a good sign. These guys aren't former players. They aren't cousins of the owner. Like, these are real candidates.
Right, and it's a full roster of a front office. There's some depth to it that we didn't really see when Vlade was in charge. And like you're saying, it's candidates that would have got a job elsewhere and were previously on other teams. Just to go through it a little bit. Yeah, Wes Wilcox, obviously, primarily, most recently was in Atlanta, even spent time as the general manager there. And there were some contracts that I wasn't a big fan of. Kent Bazemore's contract, he's still on it now, that 4-year, $70 million. All in 2016, he signed Dwight Howard to a 3-year, $70 million. Dennis Schroeder, a 4-year, $70 million extension. Not terrible, but not a good deal. Not a great run.
No, terrible, terrible. We hate Dennis Schroeder in this podcast.
Not a great run as general manager, but not horrible. He got some okay experience. He had some, I guess, like halfway decent draft picks, and then ended up stepping down with a little bit of a controversial statement that came out, and then has not had a job since. But yeah, I mean, I think a guy that with legitimate general manager experience, I think is good to add to the roster. You have notes on him, or do you just want to kind of have me run through? I can run through the background a little bit, these other guys too.
No, yeah, man, I forgot about the controversy.
Yeah, I have the statement.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, might as well.
Yeah, quote, "I know you guys may be angry with me talking to media, but I'm used to it because I have a black wife and three mixed kids, so I'm used to people being angry and argumentative." And then he moved on to a special advisor role, not after, whatever that means.
Not an ideal situation. Yeah, I remember reading about that, I think, in, I forget who wrote the piece on the Kings Herald, previewing all the GM candidates. And I think he universally went to the bottom of that list for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Sanjesh that wrote that piece.
Yeah, shouts out Sanjesh. So, yeah, that's not great, but I don't know. At least it seems that, you know, his work is not, I don't know how I'd put that. Like, it seems like his resume is good, at least, even if he's saying dumb stuff. I don't know. That definitely makes me think twice, but yeah, I guess I'll have to just stick by the fact that I'm impressed that these names, at least for people that are smarter than me, more educated than me, are considered legitimate candidates and good candidates.
Yeah, and for Phil Jabor, again, hopefully I'm saying that last name right, who was hired as VP of Player Personnel. He spent 2006 to 2011 starting with an intern and ending as director of scouting for the G League team in Houston. So spent some time with, obviously, alongside Monty McNair there, was a scout in Orlando for 2 years, and most recently was a big head of Philadelphia's scouting department, director of scouting there. And the last name on the list is Paul Johnson, who was hired as director of basketball operations. He has been a part of the OKC organization for a little while now. I didn't find an exact date. Recently was promoted to the assistant GM in the G League and had interviewed for the potential opening GM job of the Mexico City G League expansion team that was supposed to happen. And I believe ended up getting canceled or maybe postponed. But my guess is, and this is just me speculating, I think there's a good chance you see this guy as the follow-up to McClish and ends up being a major part of the G League.
Yeah, I mean, these all feel like qualified candidates. You know, stupid comments aside, for now at least, it seems like these are all quality candidates. I know the Philadelphia connection is exciting for a lot of us. They have certainly found a ton of talent. And, you know, I mean, Atlanta too, they definitely made some of those foolish big signings, but they were known for a good stretch there of turning, like, you know, second round pick types or, you know, unsigned free agent types into something. That Atlanta team, it's easy to forget how competitive they were. Didn't they make a Eastern Conference Finals one of those years?
From 15 to 17, I want to say it was a little before that.
Was before that. That was like the Horford years.
Right, yeah. In 15-16, they won 48 games, 43 the year after. Yeah, right before that, 2015-16 was that 60-win team you're thinking of. So he took over right after that.
Okay. Well, no.
But was assistant GM for those really good Atlanta teams.
Okay. So, I mean, these are guys that are associated with teams that have been successful, have been, you know, have done pretty well drafting and signing. I think certainly some panic moves, big signings. We've seen Philadelphia fall victim to that more recently as well. You build up a nice core of young players and then you start to panic because you need to find those last couple pieces. And it doesn't quite work out.
Yeah. Also, a little bit of a different direction. Dave Yeager hired in Philadelphia. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Good luck to him. I really like Dave. I hope that he finds success there. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a good coach. I think he's a quality coach. He should be a quality assistant.
Yeah, and what do you think the chances are? So Daryl Morey earlier today also stepped down from the GM spot of the Rockets, and they promoted Executive VP of Basketball Ops Raphael Stone. What do you think the chances are that McNair would have been the next guy in line?
I mean, it seems reasonable. It seems reasonable, but at the same time, I don't know. Does Morey strike you as a guy that is impulsive or maybe plans things out in advance?
Well, I don't know. Like, the impression I got was that he wasn't planning on doing this, and something kind of was the last straw with Fertitta. So that's kind of the impression I got here.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Who knows? I mean, Monty, it seems like if he really felt like he was next man up, maybe he would have stuck that out. But yeah, I mean, obviously impossible to tell from our perspective.
Right. Yeah. Last offseason was a lot of big name players moving around, and the league looked really different after those couple months. And this offseason is definitely a lot of front offices getting swapped and coaches and things like that, and less big name player movement, but definitely going to be a little bit of a different league going into next year. And obviously that also means the new draft guys coming in, and we're continuing our profiles with Zeke Nagy and Daniel Oturu today.
Yeah. Two big guys that are interesting. I mean, they both have a little bit of a shot to them, which is always exciting for us. I know you and I have been chasing centers that can shoot the ball for a long time. They're not sort of knockdown guys like your Jalen Smiths of the world, but you know, very much in contention for the early second round picks for the Kings. I know that both were mocked in the very early second round. By Sam Vecenie at The Athletic. I think we got Oturu in that one. Is that right?
Yeah, Oturu went 35 to Sacramento in that mock.
And Zeke
Nagy was 33. Yeah.
Just before. So both in that range. Both have ended up in a lot of mocks to Sacramento throughout this offseason and playoffs. And well, I guess the offseason I'm kind of referring to is the break in the midseason. But yeah, I mean, I've selected both of these guys in mocks for the Kings before, so I like them. Yeah, I mean, what was your overall impression of this sort of early second round big man duo?
I thought that there was some pieces that they were both working with that proved they could be really good bench bigs, but I thought that they both could be pretty underwhelming at times, and I saw paths to them being players that could defensively kind of get played off the floor if they were regularly attacked. They both had some positives on that end, but for the most part, I thought they had a little bit of offensive versatility you were kind of working with. And I don't know, I just questioned like how valuable really this type of player is. I think they're both interesting. I just think like if you're talking, and we'll get into them obviously, but if you're talking like 35, I'd value more of a ball handler. Like if you could get like a Woodard or Bay there, or if you could get obviously one of the many guards that we've talked about, like I just think that those skill sets could be much more valuable than what are likely to like replacement level centers.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you're describing all centers there really. I don't know that there's any centers in this draft that could not be played off the floor in certain situations. Like,
yeah,
I'm anti Precious Achiuwa. You're pro Precious. I think we'd agree there's certainly a possibility he's unplayable in a playoff matchup that where an opposing team is intending to attack him. Same can be said for Isaiah Stewart. Same can be said for, you know, Tillman's a very versatile defender, but he can't shoot. So, you know, it's easy to see him kind of getting squeezed out of a crunch time lineup for that reason. Jalen might be the most versatile, but he's not a very good lateral mover either.
Yeah, if you get him in space.
Toppin obviously has huge issues there. You know, it's Yeka, and that's about it.
Right. Yeah, I think for these two guys, I felt like they were – both of them had a better version of themselves a little bit higher in rated for me.
That's interesting. So, I mean, I actually thought the same thing for one. I'm going to be interested in the other one, but I definitely saw a better Zeke Nagy in this draft.
And is that Isaiah Stewart?
I was going to say it's Precious Achiuwa.
Interesting. Okay. So I do see that. I debated both of them there. Yeah, I see it because like the idea with Zeke would be some switchability, right? Which is what you really value in Precious. Yeah, I see a little bit of both of it. And I guess I think of Zeke as a little bit more slippery while he does also use his strength. So maybe Precious is a bit better of a comp there. But the idea is that like it's this high energy, you know, guy that's on the glass and just, you know, a lot of it has to do with being physically dominant, having a good motor to him paired with length and athleticism.
Yeah. And to me, that is kind of Precious. I think that just like huge impressive, intimidating athleticism is Precious's kind of whole deal right now. And Najee is pretty close. I mean, he's pretty terrifying in transition, and he's got quick feet.
He's a pretty good finisher.
He is, yeah. I mean, he's not like the sturdiest dude in the world. I think he's got a little bit of length factor going on. I could definitely see him getting beat up by some NBA big men. I think the same could be said of Precious, but
so yeah. Am I too crazy for saying for Zeke, I almost saw a bit of like Cauley Stein that actually cared?
Well, yeah, no, that's not crazy at all, because Precious has been my Cauley Stein comp forever. But I do think that I'm more on board with Zeke's mindset than Precious. And again, I'm just basing this on like, you know, two half an hour videos, interviews, but yeah.
Yeah, offensively, definitely Precious like plays outside of himself a little too often. But offensively for Zeke, like, I think you have him as a role man. And even like there, I have hesitation in transition, like you said. I think that works really well for him. I think as a role man, though, his decision making, if he is forced to pick up the ball and like try to make a decision in the short role, it's 70 turnovers and 27 assists. Like, I don't think he's a very good decision maker. I think sometimes he kind of predetermines what he wants to do and will take charges and things like that. So I think that he has a lot of work to be done offensively there in regards to kind of just like fine tuning things.
Yeah. And passing is actually an area that Cauley Stein was underrated in for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't see that passing upside with Najee, but again, you know, I mean, it's worth noting how young he is. He is super, super young. He is 19 still. We'll get to her tour in a second, but he's a bit older. There's potential for things to be unlocked. You know, 19-year-olds can grow, they can improve, they can add stuff to their game. And I think that he did have a really big jump this season. He wasn't expected to be the best player for Arizona, and he was. You know, I was certainly hoping that would be Nico Mannion. A lot of the team kind of ended up on Zeke's shoulders, and he did well with it. I mean, he was pretty productive with it. I'll read off some of it. Did you read his basic stats? I can get them.
I did not yet.
So 16 points a game, 8.6 rebounds, you know, almost a block. It's not amazing, but really efficient finisher. You know, finished on 57% from the field. That's 58.6 on twos and 29% on threes on a very small volume. But yeah, I mean, that's a pretty productive line for a true freshman.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that means hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. And right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Try out Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
It is, and I'm impressed that he was, like you said, the best player on a team with likely two first-round picks that are not himself. And I think that, you know, he did it in, well, he did end up getting plays called for him, obviously, but a lot of it was just kind of within the flow of the game. And I think that he does have a little bit of a higher floor that he's working with here. But on the defensive end, like I thought that I was really underwhelmed by his rim protection, to only get less than a block a game, 0.9. And I thought that his positioning in regards to when he was on the weak side was really poor. And a lot of times he just wasn't there ahead of the play. So I worry about his rim protection, and thought that more of his defensive potential was kind of coming from moving his feet laterally, when even there, I wasn't like amazingly impressed. I thought there was potential, but yeah, I mean, to be a guy that I think is coming in as a center and be a poor rim protector, I definitely worry.
Yeah, his shot blocking is a major concern. It almost feels like he grew a lot recently or something. Like he still thinks he's a 3 or a 4. And he just is, now he has to block shots and defend in the post, but he's not ready to yet.
Yeah.
That's total speculation that maybe, you know, I mean, I don't know where he played in high school, but it just, he doesn't have a center's mentality. He doesn't have the defensive mentality of a 5. He's definitely got the 4. He's definitely got the power forward mentality. And he talks about it too. You know, he describes himself as a 4. And unfortunately, he's not going to be that. I don't see that possibility at all.
Yeah, he's definitely got to be a 5. And I think that the rim protection needs to take a jump there. At very least, he's a good rebounder, primarily on the offensive end, where he pulled down 3.1 a game. And, you know, a lot of that came with effort, but good energy there. And he was pretty good on the defensive end as well. So at very least, he can kind of close out plays that way. But the rim protection definitely needs to get there for him. And I want to ask, you kind of opened with saying you think both of these guys have potential as shooters. What do you make of Najee's 3-point shot?
So the 3-point shot, you know, again, very small volume, half an attempt a game on 30%. I thought that there's something there. It's super raw. His form is not incredible. He's going to need to work on it, but he could work on it. I mean, again, he's just 19. What really impressed me wasn't the 3-point shot, but the free throw percentage on the volume. Really, really high volume and really impressive percentage. 6.3 attempts a game, 76%. I mean, that's legit. And as well, you know, a pretty solid percentage on long range twos. So I think there's like some projectability there.
Yeah, mid-range jump shots on Synergy, I have 50%, 93rd percentile. He definitely was a decent mid-range shooter, but not seeing it from three. I don't feel confident saying that like he will be a 3-point shooter, but I could definitely, it's within the realms of possibilities for sure with Zeke.
I'm right there with you. And if it doesn't happen, I mean, it's a pretty big swing factor.
Yeah.
Because like we said, we both see him as a center. He's only got a 7-foot wingspan. It's not like anything positive for a center. That's kind of on the lower end for a center. Doesn't have the shot blocking. And so if he's just a guy that's going to have to score inside for you and then a little bit of stretch on the mid-range, that's not, I don't know, like that's not going to really work for me. But if he can knock down a 3, then it's a whole different story. Then he's kind of a stretch 5 and then, you know, a very athletic stretch 5. And then I'm relatively excited.
Yeah. And the other guy's definitely knocking down threes. At least I feel good about saying that. And Daniel Oturu, who just played his sophomore season at Minnesota, to go through his numbers, 20 points, 11.3 rebounds, 2.5 blocks on 56% from the field, 36% from three, and 70% from the free throw line. To kind of start with that 3-point percentage, do you buy it for Oturu? Because his freshman season, he only shot 2 of them. But in the sophomore year, he did take a jump to shooting 52% of them again at 36.5%. And I thought I liked it. I buy it.
What's crazy is like, I almost buy it less. They're like the reverse situation where one guy's doing it from three, but his indicators aren't really there from the free throw line and from the mid range. And one guy's got better indicators from mid range and free throw line, but isn't doing it from three. I don't know. the form looks pretty good. It's just super, super slow. And so, like, it's fine. You can put him in the corner, and as long as he's open and he has the time to get it off, I mean, I don't really have reason to doubt it. But the volume isn't crazy high. You know, I mean, a few more of those rim out, and it's looking kind of like borderline functional. The range, it's not like he's splashing anything from far beyond the three-point line, the college three-point line. So I wonder, is the range become a factor? You know, I mean, even a few percentage points, it could be a factor. It could be the difference of a guy who's shooting. I mean, like if he ends up like a 30% shooter in the NBA, that's like almost not really usable.
That's fair. I just don't think that like the 3-point percentage, I mean, the free throw percentage is necessarily like a red flag that you're working with, you know, 70% on almost 6 of them a game. Like, I think that isn't something that I look at and I'm like, all right, well, I don't think this guy's going to be able to shoot threes. Like, I see where your concern comes from, but I don't know. Like, I think that he also had a nice touch that he was working with. And yeah, I thought that the form looked nice. And the B version, or I guess the A+ version of Oturu for me was Jalen Smith. And the big difference obviously is like the level of 3-point shooter. Like, we even saw Jalen Smith kind of shooting off a movement at times, which is ridiculous for his size. But I think Oturu is kind of the same thing, where he's a weak side rim protector and 3-point shooter. Like, what you're hoping, and I think we're going to see more commonly in the NBA, of like a 3-and-D rim protector 5-man.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. The comp makes sense. I just don't know that I want to buy the 3 fully. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it was the freshman year, 61% from the free throw line, that scared me a little more. Obviously, if you improve, yeah, I can't knock you for improving, but it's not like he jumped up to that. It really is like, you know, a couple misses, and again, you're in the 60s, and you know, if you're a big man and you shoot your free throw percentage in the 60s, it just would be a surprise to me if you were a really good 3-point shooter.
Yeah, fair enough. I like that I feel like he has more versatility to his offensive game. Like, I guess Zeke, you can still knock down that mid-range, but Oturu, again, I feel comfortable with the 3. And then finishing around the rim, I mean, 96th percentile for Oturu, 71%. It was the 78th percentile, 61% for Zeke that you were working with there. And yeah, while also he wasn't a very good playmaker, I there's no passing that you're getting from either one of these players here. I thought that Oturu also kind of predetermined where he wanted to go. I just think I like the versatility that he was working with a little bit better. I thought he was a better finisher, although, like, very notable, he goes to his right hand pretty much every time, and he didn't play in the best division. Like, Zeke probably played against better levels of competition, but I think Oturu can, because he'll have a gravity with his 3-point shot, I think. And I think that he weirdly can, like, dribble once or twice and attack a closeout and then finish at the rim. Like, I thought he had a surprising first step for a big man.
Huh, I didn't see that. I was not impressed with the quickness and the athleticism. I would give all the advantages on that front to Zeke Nnaji. I don't know. I didn't see anything special from Oturu. Oturu in terms of quickness, like, he's not unathletic, but I didn't like his feet. I thought he looked a little bit slow at times. He's definitely a bigger, stronger guy. Maybe they're both 6'10", but Oturu is longer. They're both listed at 240 on the sites that I use, but I thought Oturu is much, much stronger looking. And I think maybe it's just how he uses his body.
He might have, like, wide shoulders. He almost reminded me of, like, a white side.
His frame is fantastic, and Najee's is not. I feel like Nnaji is not going to be able to build on his frame as much as Oturu. I'm definitely impressed. Like, Oturu's frame is better than Jalen Smith's by a significant margin.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that O'Toole did a good job. Both of these guys, actually, I thought did a pretty good job just straight post-up defense. But I just don't know how valuable that is. And they both had good post-up offense. But I kind of just like write off a little bit of both of it. Like, I think it's kind of bailout situations you're dealing with that are very situational in regards to post defense that you're working with. And I don't think it's necessarily good enough that you're stopping like an Embiid, which is, you know, the level of players that are allowed to post up at this point in the NBA. Like defensively, I liked Oturu's, how I said that Zeke, I felt, was out of position in his weak side rim protection. I thought Oturu was pretty good there. But then when you got him in space was when you really saw the issues. I thought that there were moments of promising lateral quickness, but most of the time he wasn't turning quick enough and guys were blowing past him and there wasn't all too much of a recovery. So it's really, I think you just kind of do your best to keep him around the paint and keep him out, away from the perimeter and away from guarding in space and some weak side rim protection for Oturu compared to more of the prior for Najee.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't really mention my thoughts on Najee's lateral quickness, but I was actually really impressed. There are amazing highlights of Najee defending on the perimeter. There are also really ugly lowlights, but the potential is definitely there, and it's a much higher potential than Oturu on the perimeter, in my opinion. The block shots from Oturu, I mean, this is the biggest differentiator between the two of them. One is a poor shot blocker, and one is an excellent shot blocker.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to me, like, if I'm trying to divide up these guys, and because they are similar, they're of a similar size, they play a similar position, they'll probably have similar-ish roles. I think Najee more of a rim runner, and Oturu more of a traditional offensive player, and probably more traditional defensive player or center. The biggest, you know, they both have that little bit of shooting potential. The biggest differentiators for me, shot blocking for Oturu in his favor. Then I don't know what the second biggest one is. It might be the age and the rawness, you know, giving that to Najee. He is, a year and a half, a year and 8 months younger.
Mm-hmm.
He has more potential to grow physically. The athleticism is already so high that if he becomes a smarter, well-coached player and he gets even stronger, even bigger, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is this just are we going back to typical ceiling versus floor here?
Yeah, but like I kind of go back and forth on which one is really the higher ceiling guy. Like, I think that you could say Oturu with like a really well-rounded offensive game. Like, I guess in Zeke's ceiling, you're saying that he's hitting threes.
Well,
I
don't see
right?
Oturu as having a well-rounded offensive game.
Yeah, I guess it's just like finishing when that's set up for him and knocking down a 3-point shot.
Yeah, I mean, he's not passing. He's not. It just has no handles, in my opinion. You liked his closeout a little better, attacking closeouts. I see him as doing nothing other than finishing at the rim and shooting from the corner. Like, I don't see him as a well-rounded offensive player.
Well, they're both like, I mean, like well-rounded for like a role player. Like, they're both total role players, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more potential for Najee. I think that because he is a borderline freak athlete and he is younger and he, you know, assuming that he can turn that shot into a real thing. And then, you know, he had that mid-range game a lot better. So in terms of versatility and the types of ways that he could hurt you on offense, if we're saying they both achieve their best version of their best self, I think Najee is more effective, certainly on offense.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion, we'll go with six-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Interesting. Yeah, I might disagree with you a bit because I do buy Oturu's three-point shot and just not having seen it from Zeke. But yeah, I mean, I'm not all too far off. I don't think either one of these guys like have all too much of a difference between them. I do like Oturu a little bit better because at the same time, I thought that he was also pretty raw and has a lot of room for potential, even though he is a little bit older. I still think he does have that time to grow a bit. And, you know, there were moments of, I thought, some okay lateral speed to him that will make him at least passable defending in, you know, a hedge or in a drop coverage. And I think that will make him fine. And you could see like a legitimate 3-and-D big out of him. And I don't think that's all too far off or unrealistic. And I think that, you know, looking for someone to fit alongside Bagley with that mold made me realize this year that that's kind of a valuable or at least a rare thing currently in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm not going to take it as a lock. I think there's a lot of college players who can manage, you know, 35-ish% on, you know, an attempt a game. And I don't know. I think, you know, one comp that I saw for Oturu out there, and I like it. It's a Kings comp. It's Alex Len.
I mean, I just think he moves so much better than Alex Len. Like, even though Oturu does have problems with his moving, like, Len is so stiff and slow, and I think Oturu is at least faster than that.
Well, I mean, we're talking about rookie Len. This is Len's seventh season in the league.
Right, right.
And Len, you know, I mean, Len has shot well before as well. I mean, he shot 36.3% on 2.6 attempts per game from three at one point in his career. So, I mean, like, that's about what I'm looking at is, like, I mean, he's got a big body. Len's got a great frame. So does Oturu. I think that, like, peak Alex Len is kind of what you're looking at here.
That's probably the case. Although I'll say that, like, I think there's a higher ceiling that you're working with. I think that's a likely outcome, but I think that, you know, there's a situation where Oturu ends up better than that.
Yeah. I don't see a high chance of it. And Len, by the way, I'll just point out, you know, he's a top five pick. So,
right.
I mean, you know, just, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
And then the, actually have another Kings comp for Najee. You mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein. I actually have a different one.
Is it Holmes?
It's not. I actually think I see a little bit of Holmes and Oturu, but this one is weird. It's going to be a big stream, but there's a little bit of Marvin Bagley in Zeke Najee.
Oh, God. Okay, wait. In what way here? I guess like transition, I kind of see.
Excellent jumper, offensive rebounder. Everyone loves his jump, getting boards. Yeah, the inability to block shots.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's those basic things. It's just – it's the – potential to be an offense. I'm not saying like actual Marvin Bagley, like, you know, not Marvin Bagley that was, you know, a top five pick, but the Marvin Bagley that you'd get in the top five of the second round, like a second round version of Marvin Bagley, whereas Oturu is like a second round version of Alex Len, just in terms of player type, one that's a little more dynamic on offense, a little more athletic, bouncier, you know, in theory, people think he can play on the perimeter, just like that type of big, where I think Oturu is super locked in as your more traditional anchor, who, yeah, you'll let float out to the corner and take, like, a shot again.
Yeah, it's interesting. And obviously part of being like the second rounder Bagley is less usage and, you know, being able to be efficient in that lesser role. And I think there's some good value in that. And yeah, if you were talking fits alongside Bagley, I mean, I think that like Oturu clearly is the better fit. And for a team that, you know, allowed the highest field goal percentage at the rim last year, like personally, I would favor Oturu if we were talking, you had to choose one of the two for Sacramento.
Yeah, I did as well. But I'll say these are the two closest players that I've ever done in any of our two player breakdowns. Like I used that dumb numerical grading system that I have for prospects, and they came out within 1 point of each other on a 300 point scale. So wow. Like it's dumb. I think at that point is like, you know, who do you prefer or what type of player do you need or whatever. But yeah, basically I had them dead even. I don't know. I mean, even
I'm
now,
scared of a big that can't protect the rim.
I'm not. I don't think that like shot blocking is the whole thing anymore. Like I think centers are just so dime a dozen. Like you mentioned it, your first opening comment about this was like, I don't think these guys are valuable because you can just get these guys from right. Wherever. I think like the potential, like it's got to be about ceiling here and the, you know, year and 8 months where, you know, year and a half difference in them is probably enough for me to just call this a straight up wash where like, you know, I think it is ceiling floor. I think Oturu is a more sure thing and Najee's a little more of an upside play. And I think what it comes down to is, you know, do you want a guy that's safer or do you want to take a risk? Like which team are you? You know, you're in the early part of the second round. Do you need a project or do you need a guy that can contribute? I know that I have a buddy that does a lot of draft stuff for the Dallas Mavericks, and he wants just someone that can contribute right away. He's in love with Daniel Oturu for that team, you know. But a team like the Hawks, I saw some Hawks writers, they're in love with Zeke Nnaji for that team. I think that makes sense.
Is there any situation where you prefer one of these two of Oturu or Nnaji over Xavier Tillman or Isaiah Stewart?
No, there's not.
Yeah, me either here. And I would assume that goes the same for obviously Kongwu, Precious, and Jalen Smith.
That's correct. These guys are 34th and 35th on my big board.
Okay. Yeah, I got to lay out everybody in a total big board for myself. But in regards to bigs, I have them. The last two out of all of those that we have mentioned so far here, and if we were talking pick 35 for Sacramento, still thinking now that we've dived into these guys that you would prefer likely a point guard there for them?
Yeah, I think I would take either of them over Cassius Winston. I think they're both significantly younger and have more upside than the four-year point guard type, like the Frank Mason type. But aside from Cassius,
I might even like Malachi Flynn.
I do prefer Malachi Flynn. There's no one that we've discussed on this podcast in depth that these guys are on the bottom, except for Cassius Winston. I'd prefer both of them to Cassius just because of the age. It just scared the 4 year senior thing. It just, and being so small, it just scared me away.
Fair enough. Yeah. I think Nnaji and Oturu likely end up as, you know, guys that'll be in the league for a long time, but likely just float around different rosters and be serviceable backup bigs. You know, maybe with potential of being low level starters in the league, but most likely to me, I kind of see them as serviceable journeymen throughout their career. And yeah, I mean, it's still nice to lock one of those guys up on a pretty good deal when you're talking a second rounder. I think once you reach 43, I definitely start to get some interest in some of these guys and would not hate seeing either one of them in Sacramento. I think that, you know, you could use some depth there positionally. And yeah, I mean, definitely names to keep an eye on at 43.
Definitely. And I'm on board. I think one of them could easily slide out to 43 as well. I don't think it's crazy.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's just a huge pool of guys that you start to reach once you talk even like almost 25 in this draft to a certain point, but especially probably mid 30s where, yeah, I mean, there's a multitude of names that could drop, or maybe even just situations like I believe was the case with Terrence Davis, where, you know, unless you were going to give him a guaranteed deal, he just decided to go undrafted, and you never know what's going to happen in the second round. Definitely could see one of those guys there for Sacramento. I think that's all I have on them. Do you have anything else on them, or maybe two guys that you want to pick out for the next episode we do here?
Yeah, there's only two guys left that I think could crack my first round. So we've done 36 players. And that's why I mentioned Najee Okoro, 34, 35. But there's only two that I think could really disrupt my big board.
Is one of them Leandro Bolmaro?
Yeah, it's Bolmaro and Desmond Bane. We still have not done.
Oh, we have not. Okay. That works great for me.
Everybody else I think is locked in second round. There's like, you know, the Ramses, there's Paul Reed.
Elijah Hughes actually is 30th on Vecini, surprisingly.
I actually kind of hate his game, low-key, but I haven't really studied it. Killian Tele, maybe. Like, you know, I mean, just maybe. But realistically, yeah. Bolmaro and Bane are the only ones that I think could crack my top 30, which would push like Isaiah Stewart into the second round and maybe even Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. We've gone through most of the first. I'm good to go with Bolmaro and Bane for the next episode here. And yeah, I don't mind the game of Najee or Okoro, but overall probably replaceable level. Yeah, let us know what you guys think of those talents and the potential of Sacramento taking them and at 35 or 43. And definitely check out the Kings Herald, where there's continued draft coverage and coverage of any Kings news, and support them via the Patreon that they have on their website. And if you like this episode of the Kings Pulse podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review, and you'll hear from us again in the next couple of days here.